Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
We're back on Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand. Hey, Rebecca Fife is on a phone line. She is from Landmark Pest Management, and I should say the research director there, and she knows all about the bugs and the animals in your backyard. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. So the kind of running theme today, we've been doing the top 100 movies of the 90s, and I just really quickly tried to find a bug one, but I don't see like a Bug's Life that came after. Do you have a favorite movie from the 1990s?
Probably Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, not bad. I don't think it's on the list. It's not that good, but we're going to run through some of the top ones coming up just after 6:35. Jeff Carlin's now going to peruse the list to see if I'm wrong. Maybe it is there. Hey, what do we talk? So I read that cicadas are coming. You know, we've talked about that, but that cicadas coming out of the ground might actually be a boon for the bird population.
It really is. Cicadas' reproductive strategy is to have so many offspring at once that predators can't possibly eat them all because they're so defenseless. So since they don't have any defenses, they need a different reproductive strategy for survival, and it's abundance. They just make so many that even if the bats and the birds and the other wildlife eat a ton of them, there's still enough to reproduce and make the next generation.
Yeah, but we're not going to have more birds because there are more cicadas, right?
Well, I think we will, actually.
I mean, I thought the birds were, the baby birds were already in the pipeline.
Yeah, they are, but they're also the birds that survive this year are more likely to survive because of that food abundance. We actually do see corresponding increases in wildlife populations when their food is in abundance. For instance, oak trees don't make acorns every single year. They do it every few years, and when they drop tons of acorns, they kind of do it all at once, and we have a major squirrel year the next year.
So, really?
Yeah, we do.
I love that stuff. See, I didn't even realize that acorns didn't drop acorns every year.
Yeah, nature phenomenology and the cycles of nature and how they affect each other are so interesting. Hey, did you hear about the beavers that are affecting the Homeowners Association in Glenview?
They're not paying their HOA fees or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's the idea of trapping beavers by lethal means that is gnawing at the conscience many of the people who live there. Yeah.
That's not a phrase, trapping beavers by lethal means. That's killing beavers.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a euphemism.
Well, I guess they used to do
beaver,
that. I guess
exactly.
I forgot, like along the creek where I grew up, we used to trap muskrats with a fatal trap.
Did you? That's cool that you did that. So when it comes to beavers, they're really abundant in every county in Illinois. So they're not rare anywhere. They're a very abundant species, and they're wonderful, and they're ecologically important. They create, you know, silt by flooding things and enrich our farmlands. They're incredibly important, but they're also incredibly destructive, causing billions of dollars of damage by destroying valuable landscaping, plugging culverts, and causing drainage issues and road erosion, all kinds of things. So
This particular issue is at a housing complex or subdivision in Glenview, right? And a couple of beavers have taken up residence in the pond, and they've been gnawing trees down. So the it would cost too much to replace the trees. So the people who run the management company or whatever are looking at this lethal trapping of the beavers, right? And the beavers now have their own little fan club, and people are trying to save the two beavers in Glenview.
Yeah, I heard about 200 people turned out with signs to help raise awareness and try to get the management company to keep the beaver. But, you know, if they're plugging culverts and flooding the retention ditch there and they're, you know, destroying the valuable landscaping, it's really hard to keep them when they're, you know, a species that has populations that are just fine. That's why laws exist, to let people control wildlife. And while technically the state law allows beaver to be trapped humanely, there is a humane trap with which you can take them alive. there's not really anywhere to relocate them because the state law requires that they're relocated on private land with a suitable habitat where they're not going to cause another nuisance situation with written permission of the private landowner. And there's no private landowner that has suitable beaver habitat that wants more beaver released on it. They're probably trying to manage the damage from the ones they already have.
Okay, here's my question. How did these two beaver find this pond? I mean, if there aren't that many others around here, I mean, I know you're right, they're in every county, and I get that, but clearly they're not spotted a lot in Glenview or around this housing development. How is it that they waddled their way into this water?
Well, you said it. They waddled their way into this water. So colonies consist of one adult male, one adult female, kits from the year, so those are the babies they had that year, and then the yearlings from the previous year. And when those yearlings reach sexual maturity at about 1.5, dad says, get out of here, you deadbeat. Go make your own livelihood. And just like you said, that young guy, you know, waddles off. He'll walk about ideally half a mile if he can find, you know, water that close, but he'll go further if he needs to. And then he makes his own lady friend and starts his own colony.
Okay, but so these two must have eloped or something because the lady friend wasn't in the pond. They found the pond together, right? As well, I guess I don't know. I'm coming to the story late in the relationship.
Yeah, I didn't find out the details either about you know, whether they arrived together or apart. But beaver courtship is a really interesting thing. The beaver's Latin name is Castor canadensis.
Yeah,
it's because they have a castor gland, and this gland wasn't just alluring to other beavers; it was alluring to humans, and that's why it was featured so prominently in the cologne and perfume industry. Our colognes and perfumes featured castoreum, which is the castor gland of beavers, and it's like a funky, vanilla, weird kind of intriguing, kind of disgusting thing that I guess in really small amounts is very appealing to both humans and beavers.
Okay, I'm done with this story. Have you heard about the singing spiders or the spider noise?
No.
So there's a story where the National Geographic, they amplified the noise of spiders in their webs because spiders don't, well, I'm telling you, spiders don't see well, but they react greatly to vibration. So they took the sound of these spiders in the webs, amplified it. This is what it sounded like. Isn't that pretty cool?
It is pretty cool. It sounds like Brian Eno.
I can't believe that you didn't know that story, that Jeff Carlin and Brian gave that to me. I thought you knew that story.
That's totally cool. There was another research study about spiders that I thought was fascinating, where scientists at NASA fed them all kinds of drugs, basically, mm-hmm. alcohol, nicotine. They even gave them marijuana and LSD to see what it did to their web building, and they built these really funky webs. And I bet if they put your spider microphone against those webs, they'd probably be playing Grateful Dead or something.
That would be wild. Okay, let's go back to the cicadas. Has anyone been digging a little bit to see what the numbers look like, or are we just going to be surprised when they pop out?
Millions per acre. If it's an area that is forested or was recently forested, like the suburbs around Skokie and Glenview, they emerge in enormous numbers. And when they emerge in the forest, it's literally millions per acre. And they have a wasp called a cicada killer wasp that's about as big as my thumb. And it comes out when the cicadas come out, and each wasp will grab a cicada and drag it back to its hole in the ground. They're solitary wasps, so they each have their own hole. And it will lay its young there that feast on that cicada.
So they're thicker in forest than they are sort of, I mean, so here's my thing. I have to live in a house that was built in 1929. So when the cicadas, and I live in a neighborhood where everyone else tore those houses down and built bigger ones. So when the cicadas came, my yard was filled with them. But the McMansions around me had very few because they had dug up all the surface soil around the houses. Correct or incorrect?
You're absolutely correct. It's where tree roots are mature that the cicadas, nymphs fall down, and then they spend, if they're annual cicadas, 1 year in the ground, and if they're periodical cicadas, you know, 12 to 14 years, basically.
And we've got to run, but we're maybe in the next month or so?
Yeah, so they usually come out in May when soil temperatures reach 64 degrees, and we're getting pretty close. So early to mid-May, we should see and hear them emerge.
I cannot wait. We'll talk again before that. Okay, Rebecca?
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Rebecca Fife, watching your backyard. We're going to head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up.
WGN.